101, a version 1 podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations about technology and innovation with some of the UK and Ireland's top IT and digital leaders. My name is Suraj Shah and today I'm joined by Carl Hoods, who's the Chief Digital and Information Officer for the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. Carl, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi Suraj, nice to be here. Thank you.
So first things first, it would be great to kind of get an overview of what it is that your department does and also your role in the department.
So BEI's mission statement is about building a stronger, greener future by fighting coronavirus, tackling climate change, unleashing innovation and making Ukraine a great place to work and do business. We're responsible for business, industrial strategy, science, research and innovation, energy and clean growth and climate change. We're a ministerial department supported by 41 public agencies and bodies. Some of these include UKRI, Met Office, Land Registry, UK Space Agency, Companies House, and many more. So my role in the department is to oversee and deliver our technology and digital services. So we provide a full end-to-end digital service across BEIs and some of our agencies as well. In addition, we also provide a desktop service to the Department for International Trade.
Okay, brilliant. So obviously it's been a challenging year and it must have been interesting working in the UK government during this year. You know, has there been a real appetite for digital change throughout this year?
Yeah, I think as a department, it's always felt pretty progressive to me, unlike some other organizations that I've worked in the past. There's always been a real appetite for digital and technology services. And I think that kind of moment where we went into lockdown, and the nation went into lockdown, we were really lucky, or actually it was more for sort of our overarching architecture that we put in place, which meant to get everybody to pivot from that predominantly being in the office to working from home. For us, it was as simple as just reminding people to take their laptops and chargers home. We'd already built an infrastructure and a service which enabled everybody to work sort of seamlessly, whether they were in the office or at home. So that flip wasn't as difficult as a number of organizations. And I'm part of a number of CIO communities, and I think there's all sorts of issues with VPNs and legacy services. So in some ways, we already had that kind of modern architecture to enable us to work seamlessly, which was great. So that meant we could then concentrate on delivering the additional services that we needed to as the kind of nation went through that whole episode. So whether that be supporting the business interruption loans or, you know, teams that are working in those policy areas, it just really enabled us to kind of crack on and get that work done really easily and quickly. But seeing that, you know, the organization moved from predominantly being an in-person sort of set of meetings, whether that be our ExCo or investment committee, so then that just working seamlessly was a real great step. And then just, you know, helping with the reaction with the government. So standing up our ventilator form so that people could register with that and then let us know if they had, kind of ventilators when the demand was pretty running high for that. So a real kind of rapid pace in terms of responses and digital solutions that were needed. Now, ordinarily, you know, we would be going through sort of a very structured approach to this, whereas this again enabled us to take a much more agile approach to the work that we were doing, which is always a difficult thing to try and get across to teams that aren't in a digital space, is working in that much more agile way rather than a sequential one. So again, this afforded us the opportunity to just get on and accelerate through that change.
All right. So does that mean that a lot of those changes now, do you think, will be the way forward? Will people, you know, be comfortable doing these kind of, you know, using this agile way of working in the years to come?
I hope so. I mean, you know, if we take Microsoft Teams and use of that as an example, we're on a very much traditional kind of program for that around having a pilot group, doing lots of testing and lots of training and in-class training, all that kind of stuff. And we had a pilot group of about 400, 500 people. But the moment that we all had to start working from home meant that we then had to basically deploy teams to everybody overnight and get them using it. And it was just, you know, in terms of that take-up and adoption, people had no choice. So, you know, maybe that was the kind of example. But, you know, getting it out to 5,000 people and within a week it being used as the de facto tool was brilliant. And I also think with our digital teams, where we've been working with policy areas remotely, but in a much more agile way, for some reason, it seems to, you know, have kind of been taken and adopted much more easily. We would have had to have gone through a whole kind of education and hand-holding exercise previously. But there's something about the dynamic about people working remotely, but in a more, you know, kind of matrixed, multidisciplinary team way, which has really taken off whilst we've not been in the office. So, yeah, I'm hoping that it's, you know, it's given us the ability to have those richer conversations with our policy colleagues and just get to the point of delivery much, much more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they take to it going forward in terms of, you know, will they change any of the rules, or was it just a kind of temporary change for them? What do you see happening in the long term?
So I think and I hope that it's that the change is enduring. And I certainly have seen that as more projects have come through our pipeline and we're starting to talk about next year and our budgeting process, that, you know, there's much more willingness and desire to, you know, go into that kind of pre-discovery, discovery type approach that we have, rather than necessarily kind of write down detailed specifications. I think, you know, that flip between, or that change between, you know, the kind of supplier sort of mentality that you often get inside organizations to a much more collaborative cross-team approach is just getting more and more demand for that. And we're seeing it without us having to try and necessarily push it. So I think when it gets into that situation where your internal customers are asking you for more of that, then that's a better position to be in. And one as a CIO that you're kind of always hoping for, that you know, you always have that much more collaborative, multidisciplinary way of working. And I think for us longer term, our strategy had been very much, could we take a more of a kind of product-based approach and start to structure our digital teams alongside products? Now, for us, product might be a policy objective or it might be a technology platform we have. But we're certainly thinking now that we want to accelerate that change over the next year to be much more closely aligned with those teams, so that actually you've got digital specialists embedded alongside our policy colleagues and our other colleagues in corporate services. So again, it is everybody working together rather than necessarily having a kind of customer supplier type dynamic that you always have with an internal function.
Yes, that's interesting, because actually my next question was about the dynamic between people who work in the department. So, you know, are there people who are maybe more reluctant to make these changes quickly, even though needs must, or you know, where was it the fact that kind of everyone was pushing in the same direction?
I said, kind of mentioned earlier, I think most the most kind of striking thing thing that struck me the most when I joined Bayes was a real willingness for people to work together and get on and do things. Now, inevitably, we've got all sorts of process and governance that we need to comply with and adhere to, which gives you a bit of an overhead. But overwhelmingly, there's a real desire to get on and deliver, which hasn't abated. If anything, the pace at which we're kind of moving through things has had to speed up and increase. So I can only see more of that happening. But there's very, very little resistance. Now, there might be pockets, as you would get in organisations, where people want to understand a bit more or are slightly sceptical about what can be achieved in short timeframes. But again, that's about demonstrating that, you know, kind of agile principles. So you deliver often and you deliver early. So we're trying to maintain that and do even more. So, you know, I think it's given people the opportunity to see that you can deliver quickly and get to the point where you need to make further decisions or further investment, or, you know, decide you want to go in a different direction or continue as you are. I think it's given everybody the opportunity to be able to see that and see it in action. But sometimes it can be a bit theoretical, I think, for people that don't work in the digital space. They get the idea, but there's always a bit of, you know, kind of skepticism. And at some degree, there is that element of education that you need, because, you know, going in an agile route doesn't mean that you don't plan. It doesn't mean that you don't test. It doesn't mean that you don't have controls around it. I think it's just a different way of thinking about it. So, you know, the best way of us being able to get that across has been able to demonstrate the value, which I think we've done.
Okay, brilliant. And in terms of getting things done quicker, because especially in this last year, you know, were there any projects where you had to think about automation or think about, yeah, increasing efficiency in the way you did things?
Yeah, so I mean, automation is a big focus for us, and will be into next year. So I mean, it's kind of part of our innovation approach, and we'd started some work earlier on in the year looking at case management and workflow solutions. So we're building our case management product. I think once we essentially, it's kind of, you know, a CRM type approach, but CRM has some connotations which people, you know, kind of have different views on. So we've focused much more on case management, workflow and automation in that sense. So, you know, we're looking at establishing a center of excellence, potentially with our partner organizations as well, pooling that resource. Because if we look at the work that Land Registry and the Met Office are doing with automation, they're much further ahead than we are, because they've got a customer base and, you know, kind of an external approach, which they're looking for further efficiencies and effectiveness in. So for us, we started off looking at that internally by what can we do with our HR and shared services platforms. So our kind of street to seat type of approach, when you're out to recruitment, how can you make that much more of a, you know, an effective process, an efficient process when you're trying to onboard people and move through the kind of normal process that you do, as well as looking at what we can do around grant and fund management. Now, BASE as an organization has, you know, several grants that it needs to manage, often through our partners, but increasingly more so internally. So, you know, we're looking at what we can do in terms of automating that, what we might do around fraud, etc., where we can spot that if that's an issue. But also around correspondence what we do in terms of queries we get into the department, how can we triage those much more effectively using automation and AI and machine learning, and start to say, well, actually, we've had this question, a similar question several times before. Here are the data sources for that. These were the answers that we gave previously. Has the situation changed? Where are we now with that? So I think there's a number of things that we need to do in that space. And also in the team, we have records management and knowledge management function, which they do a sterling job. And as a team that have had to make a massive change and flip during this coronavirus pandemic, you know, ostensibly they were in our Cardiff office working on our paper-based records. Now, overnight, they no longer had access to those paper-based records. So we've changed their focus and looked at our digital records, or the digital heap, as some are calling it. So, you know, we have over 200 million digital records, which we need to assess and determine which are subject to the Public Records Act, where we need to store those and archive them. Now, 200 million records, you know, can't really be effectively looked at by humans. So we're starting to explore where we might use artificial intelligence to help us with that particular problem. So that's one of our kind of key projects for next year, is to look at that.
That's really interesting. I suppose the biggest thing that always comes about when we talk about both automation and AI is, you know, the challenges of implementing the technologies, and, you know, the cultural challenges that go along with it. Are there any other challenges, or did you find that, you know, people were maybe reluctant to use these technologies for whatever reason? Were there any other challenges?
So I think there's, you know, naturally a reluctance to say, well, we're going to let a robot answer a bunch of questions or make decisions. So, you know, we kind of saw this in Save the Children when I used to work there as well, looking at how you might use artificial intelligence across fundraising and looking at propensity to give, all that kind of stuff. So it's a similar situation in that I don't think you'd ever, you know, in the that world or this world necessarily say, well, we're going to hand over everything to be automated in terms of decision making. But I think it's there to provide further detail and to augment that kind of human process, which for us is the important thing. It's about how the two things work hand in hand. So there's not been too much reluctance to explore and investigate that. I think the difference will be when we start to look at how we implement it in earnest and it becomes much more of a tool that we use. I think that the onus there is going to be on, you know, how are we assuring ourselves that we're getting the right sort of answers out, and how we quality assuring those and checking those. So, you know, one of the things that we're doing is going to be speaking to areas of academia that are looking at explainable AI and the whole ethics process and what we do in there, so that we make sure that we've got that embedded and wrapped up. And there's obviously a strong ethos for that in terms of the work that we do in any way. So it's about how AI, machine learning, automation can work hand in hand with existing governance processes and frameworks that you've already got. And then there's the change in terms of more self-service. So, you know, we've done some work around chatbots and what we might do into the HR processes internally for that. So I think that's the general sort of change you make inside an organization when you're going from a dynamic where people are used to picking up the phone and asking questions to be a much more self-service. And we always have this debate, you know, in technology functions of, you know, if you've got a problem with your Amazon order, or you've got a problem with Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, you're used to a much more of a self-service approach. Yet there's often a dynamic internally in organizations that you kind of park that at the door. And you kind of go back into the world of wanting to pick up the phone and speak to somebody about the problem that I've got. So, you know, there's always going to be a balance of those things. But I think the more we can get into a self-service world, the more we can then free up people to, you know, to kind of concentrate on other activities that they might have to balance.
Yeah, definitely. On the AI ethics point, what kinds of things would you have to take into account for the department specifically, because there's obviously so many big projects and important projects that you guys are working on, but from an ethical standpoint, what would you need to be careful with?
So I guess for us, I mean, where we're looking at this predominantly from our function in correspondence management and grant management is going to be in the spaces of, you know, particularly with correspondences, you know, what are we going to do around the answers that we've got? Where is the data coming from and how are we understanding that? So, you know, whether there's an outright ethical issue in terms of or necessarily things that we need to look at in terms of correspondence management, I'm not so sure. But generally, you know, it's kind of, as we've heard with lots of other examples around HR, if we're using it in that process, is around, you know, diversity characteristics and gender. And we've seen some obviously high profile cases with tech vendors having to stop their use of AI machine learning in their recruitment processes because inherent bias was built into that. So it's the same ethical constraints or kind of considerations that we would need to make in the work that we do.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, we talked a lot about the dynamic within the department and the different types of personnel you have kind of working together. But the other thing in government is obviously working with other departments and particularly the kind of integration from a technology standpoint between different departments. How are you kind of doing on that front? Has there been a lot of progress in the last year or so in that area?
Yeah, so I think there is a fairly collaborative group of CIOs across government, and we all meet fairly regularly. I'm pretty sure it's once a month, which, you know, we discuss things that we're working on within our own departments and then opportunities across. And over the last few months, I've been asked to lead a piece of work looking at cross-government interoperability. And this is very much, you know, what can we do in terms of the future for there being much more collaboration from a technology services perspective across different departments. So we're starting to look at, we have been looking at, you know, some of the basic infrastructure requirements around, you know, Gov Wi-Fi and common printing services, what we might do around access passes to buildings and all that kind of stuff. But equally starting to look at the business architecture across government. So, you know, what are the big chunks of functionality and requirements that we need across government? And that's between policy departments like BEIS or delivery departments like DWP and HMRC. And look where there are opportunities to collaborate much more from a technology perspective. So, you know, we're starting to plan out that work, which will start in earnest next calendar year. But looking at things like identity services across for a civil servant across government, so we can start to share applications and services much more. And it's particularly relevant, you know, not just in the day-to-day work that, or correspondence and, you know, kind of knowledge sharing and things that go on across government anyway, but increasingly where we've got teams that are working cross-department. So we have joint teams between ourselves and Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government and Department for Transport. Now, you know, we've each got our own kind of systems and way that we work. So that often can lend itself, you know, in some occasions that teams between departments might have multiple devices. So if we can get ourselves into a position where actually we can consume services from one department or another, that's going to make us much more efficient and effective in terms of the day-to-day work that we do. So that's the kind of overall scope, is to say, well, how can we move to much more of that position? And there are going to be lots of considerations that we need to take in that. But yeah, it's an exciting piece of work, and I think it's moving there pretty quickly. And, you know, we've done a lot of work over the summer, just, you know, basics in terms of video conferencing tools and how we can get Teams and Google Meet and Zoom and other things to be easily accessed and consumed between different departments, which might have different architectures and different technology services in place. So what we're aiming to do is build a set of standards and then blueprints from which we can scale and build and share those. It's going to be something which we're looking for departments to collaborate with each other on and start to develop in conjunction with each other, so that we really get that collaboration and interoperability built in from the beginning. So to give an example, you know, we're working with Department for Education on bring your own device policy, which they've already started some work on. So rather than us start from scratch, we're going to take what they've done as a blueprint and we're going to see how we can make that scale across other departments. So an exciting piece of work, really, but it's going to be quite big.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like something that could really help, particularly because there's often, you know, talk about so much duplication of things that are made well in departments. So if you can end up using, as you say, the same blueprints as other departments, then that's definitely going to be of benefit and increase efficiency, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we've seen that this year with some of the correspondence management tools that other departments have used. That you know, I mentioned we're looking at that, and we're looking at how we can scale and build on the solutions that have already been put in place by other departments, like Department for Health and DfE and Transport. So I think the more we can get to understanding what the, you know, the common building blocks are that we can all collaborate on, then the more we can take the lead. But there are always going to be pressures in terms of requirements for delivery that each individual departments have. But I think this is about us really, you know, thinking about interoperability from the beginning and being able to embed that as a practice and as a culture. And again, that's no different to, you know, kind of some of the issues that we faced in Save the Children, where that was a federated organisation, but all trying to come together for a common cause. But yeah, each individual entity had its own technology roadmap and things it needed to do. So being able to drive that towards some kind of commonality is always a good thing. And I think for me, it could be a number of different layers. You know, there's a common set of tools that we all need to use: email, document storage, document collaboration. You know, so why can't we standardize and make that a bit more of a kind of common approach across each of the departments? And then there'll be things that are specific for each department, which we might not need in Bayes that HMRC need, for example. Yet, if we can get awareness and sharing of that across other departments, then it might become a need in the future. So we wouldn't want to reinvent the wheel again. So I think this is probably a bigger cultural change than it is a technology one, just about us being more open and aware of what's happening in other departments, which I think is there to some degree, but I think we can build on that and much more.
Great. And just to kind of end on, I was just wondering about the next maybe 6 months, which are obviously pivotal for the UK. Is there anything that you are working on as a department or in your team specifically, which, you know, is a key priority right now, perhaps even supporting some of the kind of things with health aspect?
So I guess, you know, one we've all read about in the press recently that we're working in conjunction with other departments on is the vaccine. So the Vaccines Task Force is part of Bayes. So we're working to support them. You know, is kind of one of the most immediate and talked about initiatives. We're also working quite closely with our policy colleagues on the Green Homes Grant service, which is a, you know, if you haven't seen, is a £2 billion investment on how we can improve people's homes. So cavity wall insulation, whether that's ground source pumps, etc., for energy efficiency. So we're working quite closely with that team on the digital proposition and then the whole kind of grant management process. So that's going to go on for some time yet. And then for the rest of us is about, you know, embedding those platforms that we've talked about delivering, particularly around case management and automation. Then also pushing forward on our innovation agenda. So earlier on in the year, we developed an innovation toolkit, which again is part of our kind of cultural awareness, cultural change program that we've got in digital to just get colleagues across the department up to speed in terms of, you know, new technologies, different approaches of design thinking, so that we can get them to, or help them to think about their problems in a different way. So we're going to keep pushing with that toolkit and embedding that across the organization and then using it to approach problems. So earlier on in the year, we built a virtual or augmented reality toolkit pilot for building insulation to help policy teams think through particular problems in that space. So it's just a different way of bringing that to life. And we're planning an innovation festival next year as well, where we can start to collaborate across both our partner organisations plus the private sector, you know, on some of the themes that we're talking about, particularly around climate change. So for those that haven't seen, Northumbrian Water do a fantastic innovation festival every year. We've spoken to them and we're hoping to do something in collaboration with them and other utilities companies, but early days in planning on that. So, you know, really it's kind of BAU for us. Now we're in that mindset and kind of approach of being able to deliver quite rapidly and quickly. So how do we turn that to the other policy objectives that we've got coming up for the next year?
Oh yeah, that's a real variety of different projects. Well, listen, brilliant. Carl, thanks so much for taking part in the podcast, and it's great to hear about what's going on in your department and in government as a whole. So I'm sure our listeners will find it really interesting too. So thanks and good luck with everything in the next year or so. So thanks a lot for listening, everyone. I've been your host, Suraj Shah. For more episodes of the 101 podcast, please visit version1.com/1-0-1.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.